Blog Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues. On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Well, thanking God for another day of being here, everybody. We've had definitely a very busy week, and this past couple of segments has definitely been heating things up. So getting our shout-outs out the way, to Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 Kiss FM Radio in New York City, currently with isoradio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m. and again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he is gracing New York City with the best of live R&B events all over the best of venues as the CEO of that wonderful company, Track One Entertainment. Now, we do have an event announcement from Barry's forte out there, and it's on the 17th of July. That will be a Tuesday, and it will be the DJ All-Stars. It's the best of New York City's Radio Mixmasters. Thursday, July 17th at SOB's in New York City. If you want to get there and figure out what's up, hit them up at hit up DJ Felix Hernandez or Barry Mason at track1entertainment.web.com, or you can head over to classicsoul.com and see what Felix Hernandez has to say about it. And you can be a part of this great event. Now, everybody who knows Barry and knows Felix knows when you go out to one of their parties, you don't come out disappointed, not whatsoever. So head over to the Track One Entertainment website, find out what's going on, or hit up Barry Mason on his personal page on Facebook at Barry Mason on Facebook, or head over to theclassicsoul.com and see how you can order tickets that way. All right. Thanking my team, Lady Diamond Elaine Yeves, wishing her a recovery. We are going over to Monster Miles and DJ Dilmerica Lottie Williams, as well as still sending our prayers to Deacon Zeddy Williams. He will be back soon, ladies and gentlemen, in Toledo, Ohio. To my starting panelists, Carlton Jones, Patrick Irvine, Alteric Atkins, Thalo Jenkins, Darlene and Arlene, and Erica Talbert, you guys have been one phenomenal group of people to discuss with. Heading over to thank our social media participants, the On the Edge Listeners Lounge with Katie Barnett. What about us for Carlton Jones, and thanking him for tonight's sponsorship. Patrick Irvine with the Urban Intellectuals Open Discussions Group, the Black History Suppressed Group and Real World Black News and Discussions Group with Mark Pittman, and to the Black Love and Conversations Group with Linda Miller, the Capitalist End Group with Marvin Young. You guys have been phenomenal in the on and off the air discussions. I want to thank all of you for your personal commitments to your communities and to what you offer here. So thanking you all very much. To the rest of you on Facebook that has been real active, my Blog Talk Radio listeners and followers over there on Twitter and Pinterest, thank you all very much for what we have been communicating with and you've been giving me and all of my followers. So thank you. Now, before we head out into speaking about what tonight's conclusion of our three-part series, Real Love versus Rude Love, is, I do want to announce a little bit of a very special situation. I was approached by, or I should say contacted by, an artist by the name of Chris Curry, who wanted me to get involved with a video that he has put out with a song that he wrote on an anti-violence movement. Stop the Violence movement is what he's doing. This is something that affects our community, especially our Black community, beyond belief. And our children are being taken by drive-bys, by police shootings, by, you know, violence among themselves, by this gun war, by the drug war, by the media. It's just a little too much. And we as a community have got to become aware and involved and get more involved with prevention measures, something we have not been doing. Now, with that being said, this man sent me a video, which I finally got to see today, and I was just so moved by it that I told him I would definitely play it today as our break song, as well as we will have an interview with him. Hopefully everything goes okay this Sunday on a special broadcast just about stopping the violence among our teens and in our communities. So without further ado, we're going to go out with our pre-discussion song with the debut on this panel of Chris Curry featuring Fetty Wayne. I think that's his name. If I pronounce that wrong, I'll definitely correct it a little bit later. But the name of it is called The Shoes on the Other Foot. So here's Chris Curry with Shoes on the Other Foot. After word from him and our sponsors, we'll be back to get this discussion started. Don't go away.
Everybody drinking, busting, driving, funny, fun without surviving.
De Niro!
What up now, homie?
Think you got him, sir?
Yeah, I don't know. I got somebody.
Somebody needs tonight,
yeah,
man.
Somebody, yeah, you already know, man. Let's go.
Driving home tonight, felt so different and strange. It was a warm summer evening, yet it was pouring icy rain. Pulled up to my street, like a little after midnight. Saw all the cars, police lights. I knew something wasn't right.
You know how hard it's gonna be to get to the bottom of this. Nobody's listening that bad, man.
Forgive me for all the wrong I've done. never thought you would die by the hands of your own son. Your favorite one, your pride and joy, your baby boy, mama.
Oh, I didn't mean to shoot you, mommy. I didn't mean it. Forgive me. I didn't mean to shoot you, mommy.
I've hurt my family, my community, my city, and myself. I will never see, touch, or enjoy my mother again. I took the one thing from her and others that cannot be replaced. Life.
Life is out.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with KD Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. KD and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with KD Barnett and friends. As I said, that was a very compelling song in a movement to the Stop the Violence movement that we have all got to get a grip on in our awareness and definitely our participation with protecting our community and especially our children. Okay, so that was by Chris Curry once again, and you will be hearing from this young man on Sunday in a special broadcast that we will be having strictly for the anti-violence movement and for his Stop the Violence series. So with that being said, let's move on to what tonight is about. The past 2 days, we have been discussing real love versus rude love, the effects of the fatal attractions, the poisonous attractions of good people to bad girls or bad boys. We spoke first on the attraction of women to bad boys while complaining there's no good men. And we spoke yesterday on men being attracted to bad girls while complaining, rejecting, or overstepping the real good women that are out there for them. Well, today, we're going to be discussing the conclusion with both people on the table, but not just about them. It's going to be discussing what it is that each of us contribute to making this bad apple continue to grow on other poisonous trees. We're going to be discussing direct effects on the community, because there's a couple of things I'm going to bring up in just a few minutes for those of us that are still asleep or pretending to be. And we're going to be discussing some actual real solutions, and not just in the second part, but as we speak about the things that we have got to stop pretending doesn't exist. We have got to stop trying to not self-reflect or account for things that we do, men and women alike. It's time to wake up. And as we say this often, but I'm tired. I'm frustrated. I am sick to death of all the wants that we have and all the things that we can do that we don't do. And meanwhile, the people who are suffering are our children, not even so much just the community, but the biggest, most important group of our community, our future. Let's get started. When is it going to be enough for us? When have we had enough? How many slideshows of tragedy and destruction do we need to see played out about our lost teens, our murdered youth, our broken families, our discombobulated households? What are we waiting for? A different color green light to get a move on things? What are we looking for? How many more times does a man have to call his black queen a bitch? And how many more times does one of us black queens have to emasculate our kings by telling them that they're no good, just like the media tells them? How many times do we have to have something that's a gem and a perfect treasure right in front of us, but because there's some false gold glittering off in the other end in the form of see-through outfits, in the form of big mouth women, in the form of real bad men who has given in to the destruction and the desperation and the hopelessness of what white supremacy and media and everything else included has given them, because nobody knows what it's like anymore for us to remember that we're strong, that we're persistent, that we're persevering people, that we were vocal people, that we once had pride for ourselves, that our race and our unity was important, that our communities meant something. What is it going to take? How many more excuses are we going to make? How many more minutes of precious time are we going to waste on things that do nothing but further destroy us? What is it going to take? So now, if Trayvon Martin's continuous trial coverage hasn't been enough, if Jordan Davis being shot to death in a moving, retreating car by a drunk white man who didn't like the fact that he had the nerve to not only play loud music that this man couldn't take in his drunken state, but he had the nerve to have a mouth with it. He had the nerve to stand up and say, I'm a person and I can do what I'd like to do in a free country. If that's not enough, if it's not enough for a woman to be on trial for her life, attempted murder, for trying to shoot a bullet in the air to warn her abusive husband that she wasn't going to stand for it and take it regardless to what the semantics of the details were about her personal feelings for this man. If that's not enough, if it's not enough that a white girl can sit there and be a continuous drug abuser and take her infant baby into a car seat and stick him on top of a car because she's too drunk or high to realize what the hell she's doing, and have that child dropped in the middle of a highway, which by the grace of God and God alone, that child was unharmed. And she gets probation, whereas the mom who left her children in the car, stupid as that may have been, she had good intentions to try to make an interview to get herself out of the rut that she was in and let her children see that there was a better way, regardless of physical circumstances. She gets life and her children removed. If this isn't enough for you, if it isn't enough that every vile thing that's out there, they're using blacks on the surface to execute this plan of destruction, to say the least. If that's not enough, maybe this will get you moving. I'm going to give you four names, and I want you to remember them very well. Brittany Smith, Shaniqua Campbell, Gaoz, and Taisha Sargent. Quite sure you don't know what the hell I'm talking about, but I'm going to bring them up. Four young black American girls from Harlem involved in a gifted school program, given full scholarships to go to Harvard, was about to get there, did 4 years of college, ladies and gentlemen. Three of those ladies lost their futures, and two of those three lost their freedom, and the fourth one lost her damn life. Do you want to know why? Not because they were doing anything wrong. This time we can't even blame white America too much, but because they had an attraction to bad boys, and not even just bad boys, but thug boys, boys who cared nothing about their future. That might be on what white America is putting down on us. But these girls had an attraction to bad boys. Maybe the whole horrible implemented programming thinking of going to school is somehow a sin for us, is an embarrassment for us, it's too bougie for us, it's too boring, it's too safe. So let's mix it up and put some excitement out there. Where do you think they're getting that from, ladies and gentlemen? You think it's from their own minds? They're young girls just making out of college. So clearly, somewhere down the line, the generation before them missed out on doing their part. So what happens now? Now we have one beautiful young African-American smart girl, a future community beacon, dead because somebody went in to rob her thug boyfriend's stash of marijuana in his house, tied him and her up, and stealing from them and degrading them wasn't enough. They had to shoot her point blank in the damn head. Bye-bye, future doctor. Bye-bye, future black leader. Bye-bye, future black strong queen, nurturer of the nation. Bye. Because he's sexually exciting. There's something about the bad boy thing going on. And we're sitting up here like damn idiots, allowing them to promote this garbage into our children. Because everybody can get up and say, you know what? Did you see that article? Did you see what Solange did to Beyonce's book? Man, did you see what Rick Ross did? Did you see what Neo and Usher did? Here's a question to that. Did you see what this man did to Taisha Sargent? These other three girls, all in it, all three, thug love, wonderful. Two of the girls were friends that their boyfriends were together. And these girls were together, so it's one big double dating situation, right? Well, guess what? No loyalty there, because as soon as the crap hit the fan and legals got involved, Shaniqua turned on Brittany. Brittany went to jail. The two boys who already belong in jail, according to society, was already headed back to what they know. So there goes another future lawyer, nurse, business owner, entrepreneur, doctor. She's gone. The other one skated away, didn't get criminal charges pressed because they turned her into a snitch. But her future's gone because the record alone is a problem. Now we have another girl that also is in jail. So three girls lost their futures. Two girls of those three lost their futures and their freedom, and one girl lost her life and her future altogether. Still don't think that attraction to bad boys and bad girls is a problem? Is this the last and final slide on the slideshows of our very horrible existence? Right now, that's going to be the thing that says, whoa, let's wake up. It's not enough that they've shut down water, the very essence of living in our all-black neighborhood in Detroit, Michigan, and there's nobody over here getting the hell off of Facebook or social media to go and sit there and say something, that town alone doesn't understand the power of blocking people off before they can get something done. When are we going to wake up? When is the instant gratification not that important? But everybody knows what the hell LeBron James is doing right now. That's what's getting them the wake-up call, because suddenly now I'm seeing everybody talk about how they're done with LeBron and with basketball. When is it enough? When the hell are our kids enough? Today, on this panel, we are going to open up about every damn thing that we both do. We women emasculating our men. We women allowing them to emasculate them damn selves, by allowing them to be as sagging as possible and loving the fashion with it. By sitting up there and hooting and hollering for every loud, mean-talking thug there is on rap right now, talking about it making you look like all you belong in is in skimpy clothes, too much bling, and looking like something that just came out of a bad paint shop with all that makeup on your face. To you men who are sitting up there telling your beautiful women that you're not good enough because you're not showing all of your body to the world, because you wear weaves. Meanwhile, after she has not wore weaves or did whatever at the time, her mouth was loud. She sat there and stood by you, as I like to say, sharing her sandwich, her tuna fish, her welfare rolls, whatever the hell it was, to make sure you got to achieve your dream, only for her to get told by you that, you know what, now that I've gotten all polished up, now that I'm big-time NBA, big-time media, big-time industry man, you're not good enough to join the other side of the fence with me, and the very people and the very thing that we laughed about with you, we're going to go and put that girl on our arms in a different color, wearing weaves longer than what you wore. And that's going to be my prize. And when we get there, we're going to further let the outside world know how stupid we are, because while we have a good, strong black woman on our hands, we're going to go have baby mama drama with another culture on the outside while we're still in this relationship. And guess what, ladies? We're going to sit right there and stand by our man. Any one of you coming up here batting your eyes as if we don't do things just as badly as they do. If anybody sits back here and hears what I'm saying and takes offense to it, clearly you have issues to resolve. And I don't really care. I don't really care anymore. Our children are out there getting shot, getting their futures taken away. Our children don't know who to be, how to be proud, because guess what? You're not teaching them. You're busy telling them all the skills it takes to sit down and learn how to be computer literate, to be illiterate on a place that's making you look worse. That meanwhile, while you're spending all this time on social media, the social media hosts are saying, uh-oh, don't like that smart remark coming out of a black man's post. Let's cut that down. Let's ban that content. Meanwhile, on the other side of the same social media page, there's another page that has 45,000 likes talking about something as sensitive as Trayvon being a monkey on a lynching rope. And that's acceptable. That's not considered offensive. That's not considered something that's hate mail or bashing. We're so busy wiping the sweat off our brow the minute we found out that something that looks like a panic attack on the social media turned out to be a satirical article. So, ooh, that's all we needed to know. We're good. The best we could do when all of these big-time media people are out there using you, breaking you down physically, stopping your future, killing your knees, killing your souls, the best that we could do is turn our T-shirts and our hoodies inside out and march. And then as soon as all the hype is over, turn them right back the right side in and go back and sit down and support them some more. And you wonder why we can't move from where we are and where the hell our kids are going. Now we want to pull our hair out about how bad these kids are getting. What do they have to go any other way? Two panelists are in, and I'm going to bring them in to get started this evening. One second. Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Hi, Erica. Let me just bring in the panelists behind you, and you'll have the mic, okay?
Okay.
Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Hey, Katie. What's going on, Erica? This is Professor Carl Tom Jones from Philly.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to both of you. Erica, let's talk this. First of all, your whole overall opinion about the bad boy, bad girl attraction, because both genders are on the table tonight. What do you feel that each side has contributed? What can we say to each other? What are some solutions?
Well, I'm not sure if it was Alcaric that touched on this a little bit, but the first thing is, you know, what do most females see in their neighborhood? Who is the man in the neighborhood? The drug dealers. So a lot of women sometimes do look up to the drug dealers and find them attractive because they get so much respect in the hood, because they have so much power. And a lot of women are drawn to that power that most drug dealers carry in the hood. Again, as far for the guys, I guess it would be it's like the men said last night, it's the chase. But at the end of the day, it's up to us that know better to show them better. There's no way in this day and age that women should still look up to bad guys, but it happened. I had the friend that I often speak about, she had met this guy. He had no kids. She met him at a school, and he was picking up his nieces. And he would tell her, they exchanged numbers or whatever, they would text, and he would tell her, good morning, beautiful. How are you today, beautiful? You know, he always addressed her with such positiveness. She asked me one day, what in the world is wrong with him? I said, look. She said, oh, you just get on my nerves with all that. You're beautiful. You're a queen. You this, you that. And I said, why does it bother you? She said, because it's so annoying. It seems so pressed and so desperate. I said, well, you know what your issue should be? The issue should be, why don't other men address you that way? I said, because let me tell you something. When you're used to men addressing you as being a queen and as being beautiful and being gorgeous, you have no issue with another man telling you that. So most women fall for the bad guys, and then when a good guy come along, they have no clue as to what to do with them, none whatsoever. But that goes back to having high self-esteem, hiring your standards. If a man addresses you and he's not treating you the way that you feel you should be treated, then, hey, you have to let him know. Stop him before it begins. But then also that goes back to, how is a woman supposed to know how she's supposed to be treated if she don't have a father?
Exactly.
My father wasn't in my life, but for the most part, my mother and my brother showed me. My mother and my brother had always taught me how I should be treated. And when my mother got married, my stepfather showed me how I should be treated, and my stepbrother showed me how I should be treated. But
go ahead, honey.
For the women that don't have that example, you cannot have your self-esteem so low that you're willing to fall and settle for anything. It's not okay for a man to call you out of your name. And
absolutely,
we are desensitized to it because of the music.
Absolutely. And I will say one thing before I hand over the mic to Professor, is that what you just established right there with what you spoke about in your personal upbringing, okay, that is a pattern that was established because your mom demanded nothing less than the best of people coming in to be added to the family. Your brother was, I guess, taught by your mom, which in turn he turned out to say, no, you're my little sister, and it's not going to work like that, and this is what it should be. He spoke from a man's point of view, the closest thing to a man you had, And then your mother made sure that the person she decided to spend the rest of her life with after your dad was definitely somebody that was going to be worthy of her sense and be worthy of giving you what she plans for you. And if we as a community make sure that that's a non-negotiable standard, we would have so much better results with not just our internal operations, but the way that we stand as an internal operation to outsiders. And I do have a question for both of you when Professor finishes his point. So, Professor, your take on this. You know, what is it that we both do? What is it that, you know, needs to change?
Well, I think Erica hit a lot of things, and she hit on a lot of key points. It's about what are you willing to deal with in terms of overall respect. And I look at it like this. If I'm with friends and I'm talking about somebody that I'm spending some significant time with, the way that I refer to her to that person is the way they're going to refer to them. So if I'm calling all kinds of bitches and stuff, and I'm talking about sex life, this, that, and the other, then when she's around them, that type of thing, those type of things rub off. And do I want that to be what represents me when I'm out there with my in my social groups and social gatherings with friends and family? So you have to look at it in terms of self-esteem and self-respect. You know, the reason that I had, one of the things that, I gotta say the reason, but one of the things that started me with working with the phrase, what about us, is that when I put a workshop together to deal with some of the decisions that we make, one of the young ladies that, it was a young lady whose story, her name was Kimber, and her story was all over the news at that point because Kimber had gotten into a relationship. She was on the college campus in near Washington, D.C., somewhere in Virginia. And she had gotten involved with a drug dealer at the time. Now, it was for the excitement. It was just, you know, he was one of the drug dealers that hung on campus. However, long story short, they had gotten to situations where they had to run and travel the entire country, and they ended up in Seattle. Because on their way to Seattle, I'm not sure if they got to Seattle. I believe they ended up in Seattle. And the FBI had closed in on them. Now, she had to face a mandatory minimum because the case was against him, but he was murdered. And they still had the case. So they ended up charging her with all of the, with the conspiracy to distribute, kingpin charges, and things of that nature. So what happened was, fortunately for her, President Clinton, at the end of his inauguration, gave her a pardon. I mean, at the end of his 8-year term, gave her a pardon. But she was still being jailed today, and it's all because she was attracted to the flashy things. Her self-esteem told her she didn't deserve to be with a guy that, like that. So she went out there, and she sold herself, she sold her morals, to try to be with the guy who she thought was out of her league. And I think a lot of us lack the self-respect and self-esteem to say, listen, I deserve to be in whatever situation. I deserve to be elevated, and I deserve to be treated that way. And that's both men and women, because a lot of times when the brothers are going for that sleazy sister or sleazy woman, it's because they don't feel as though they have what it takes to deal with a woman who will be seen as upper echelon or who carries themselves in a manner that would exude the type of respect that you would want somebody to treat your mother or sister with. So, the answer and the problem is both self-esteem in some areas. Where you feel a level of respect and self-esteem, then you don't have to worry about all of those different things because, and as you guys can see, I'm on the porch, so you can hear people walking up and down the block. As you can see, I mean, if you have self-esteem and self-respect, then you're going to attract a certain person and you're going to command that they treat you a certain way, and you wouldn't be with them if you could just treat them any old way.
Absolutely. There's another panel who's trying to come in, so let me bring them in, get their point, and then I'm going to pose a question to the group. Welcome to the show, Coley. You're on the air.
Hey, hello, it's Stanley. How are you? Great show, like usual.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Stanley. How are you?
Very good, very good. I think that it comes back to responsibility and accountability when it comes back to that issue. Really, I've listened to the other woman before, and I do not agree that it's just that women or men, we need to learn both ways. We need to know what we need to bring to the relationship, and we need to, of course, have high self-esteem over each other. And it's the combination of the both that's going to bring you to have somebody great. Because if you only think that you are a very high self-esteem and everything, but you don't know how to become a giver in this world, you're not gonna attract somebody who's going to be a giver to you. If you only try to trade, which a lot of people do in relationships, they don't even try to basically, they say tit for tat. They don't say to in their mind, what could I do to have a great relationship? How could I be kind to this person? How could I be this? What could I bring this? Because the only person you could control in this world is you, whatever relationship you are. If you are in a somebody that, if you are attracting somebody who's not good for you, you have to look at yourself and say, I attracted that person for a reason. And you got to be honest with yourself. And a lot of people are not. A lot of people will cover up with every excuses in the world. I didn't have mama, I didn't have father, I didn't have this. If that was the case, every person who didn't have a parent should all be in bad relationship. And I'm sorry to say they're not. Some people didn't have both parents and they are in great relationship. And some people had both parents who loved them dearly and did everything to them and believed in them and gave them all the confidence in the world. But the person didn't believe in herself and didn't even look at herself and didn't know the word responsibility.
And there would have to be a reason for that. There are plenty of serial killers that grew up and don't fit the mold of, you know, why they were turned into serial killers. There are a lot of people that are out there that have absolutely nothing in their past to blame on why they chose to indulge in the behavior that they do. But with this attraction to something that you can clearly see coming forward at you as being nothing but poison and still jump into it or accept it or drink it, you know, proverbially speaking, okay, there's a reason for that. Why is it? We were speaking a couple of days ago where a lot of girls or guys are rebelling against a great society. They grew up with everything, but it was too boring for them for whatever reason. They got recreationally addicted, and then here goes the spin cycle of viciousness.
Yeah, because it is the spin cycle of viciousness and everything, because when, and I agree with the other caller said, when a man comes and do some compliment to a woman, I'm sorry, a lot of women will think he's soft, he's weak, he's this, and he won't even be respected. I know many brothers who are respectable brothers who are doing what they need to do, who will have a hard time having dates on Friday and Saturday night when they should be the one that should not be single. But I know Thark and all the people, bad boys and everything, who will come to you personally, and I know friends personally, and told me the answer, why should I be nice, Stanley? Why should I be kind? Let me show you what I have and everything. And they come with a list of black books that have 20 girls. And they say, I could call all of them, and I could have fun, and I could do this. And they're all in my banking calls. Tell me the reason I should be nice. Tell me.
And I can guarantee you he didn't just walk up to those black book girls initially and just came out and said something like, yo, bitch, I want you. I can guarantee you that before he showed
up. No, very smooth person, smooth talker and everything. Very smooth. Charmer and everything. No, they didn't come with this way. No.
Absolutely.
I'm not talking about women who don't have heads. I'm talking about women who are smart. I'm talking about women with careers. I'm talking about this. And you would never thought that. But that guy is telling you, what should I change? I don't see no advantage to change.
Brings back to what I'm saying is that obviously this bad boy person knows that he has to change his approach based on the person that he's targeting. So, yes. The problem with that, though, including men who go after bad women, that they see acting a certain way that they definitely wouldn't have chosen straight up or, with, you know, for the ease of the relationship, wouldn't have chosen, but somehow there's something there, okay?
Yeah.
Obviously, there was something about that that goes back to the personal choices that somebody makes to stay in it. The question is why? The question is why. Well, now, nowadays, I remember when we spoke about where your age bracket is, you're kind of in the middle of it. So the whole thing is that there's a lot of the generation before them that didn't pass on what the generation before them gave them. And that is where we're at right now, where we have to come to a point of saying it is time to do our part and become aware, become involved, become participative, and take the reins back and start leading these kids the right way. How about instead of it being a relationship right off the bat, that you first come in being a strong individual before you try to take on the extra role of being a partner to someone that you're not ready to even be an individual?
How about loving yourself and respecting yourself and knowing that you're great inside of you and not accepting anybody putting you down and thinking that you're not great?
And that comes from somebody before them consistently putting that in their head. There are plenty of people that may be loving and maybe whatever, but don't realize that something's going on with their kid. Okay? And feel that everything, some people that are loving and sweet have a different measurement of to what that means. Some people think if they buy their kids every iPod in the world, that was love. Some people believe that if as long as I put a roof over their head and food on their table, but I spent no time trying to figure out what's going on with them, that's a problem.
True that.
That's a problem.
If you don't know how to influence your kid, if you don't even spend time with your kid, do not be surprised that you're. If you don't even know your own kid and don't know how to influence them, do not be surprised at what he becomes later on in life, because you didn't do your job as a parent of basically influencing and structuring him. But even if you do that, you have to teach him the first thing first, which is responsibility and choices. And you got to really teach him what it is. If you make a choice to go out with that kind of man or that kind of, this is the consequences of this. And you have to teach him, the man and the woman, what is the consequence. We have to teach people.
You know what, Stanley? I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one of the points I'm going to hit on tonight. You know what I started thinking last night at the last two, and I'm talking to all of you on the panel here. I started thinking, what could be another angle as to why people would actually see a poison pill coming at them and swallow it anyway? And here's another thing. The same way that our parents made the horrible mistake of teaching us about sex from the birds and the bees, literally birds and the bees angle, meanwhile, they're going outside and they're getting, you know, the sticks and stones version of sex. Okay? So these kids are leaving their homes half-cocked, half-armed, not totally in the loop. Okay? Here's my thing. The same way that we made suggestions yesterday on trying to teach our boys, like, to demystify the sexual aspect of life, to stop putting that as one of the measurements of manhood, how many notches on the headboard you have. The same way we should do with bad boys and bad girls. Instead of us trying our best to shelter the kids, run away, put them on the other side of the block when we see this one coming, how about we let them see exactly what it is and let them know this is what the hell is going to come out of it.
That's how my mom taught me how the thing of drugs. That's how exactly she were in New York, and she said, you know what, I don't want to have that problem with my son. So at 6 years old, she brought me to the worst place ever, and they say, if you take drugs, this is the consequence. And I saw the worst crack, and I never took drugs ever. Never got influenced, never took it, because that image will stay in my mind for the rest of my life.
And if that doesn't work, because some kids don't respond to the same type of method, then you better find out which one does.
Exactly.
The whole point is that we have a culture, and which I hate to use that word, because when I grew up hearing the word culture, it was defined as things of good. You know, this is a culture. You know, you're a cultured individual. The socialites were considered cultured people, things you're supposed to follow, things you're supposed to use as a guideline. So I hear things like rape culture. To me, it's redundant. To me, it's a contradiction in itself. So I'm hearing rape culture. I'm hearing gay culture. I'm hearing things like that. All of these things that one word is supposed to define good, but yet the adjective before it is defining everything in opposite. So since we have to go that way these days, ladies and gentlemen, how about we stop having this attraction to bad boys and bad girls culture be a prominent situation in communities? And how about we give a damn about our kids so much that we take those extra steps to say, wait a minute, whoa, what's that about? How do you feel about yourself? What do you think is the meaning of beauty? What do you think is the meaning of being a well-rounded person? What is it that you value? What is it are your goals? You know what? I asked a question, and I believe it was to my ex-husband, and I asked him this one day before the children were involved or anything. I said, if you right now didn't have, no, we had one daughter. And I said, if you didn't have a child right now, if you and I were just getting together, whatever, what would you think would be your achieved level of success? Now, he lived in a one-bedroom, well, no, he lived in a basement studio at the time. Okay? He drove an old French car that I don't think the French even make anymore at the time. And he said, I would have a new car. Not that I would buy a house to reinvest in myself or get a house and get a car and invest in some stocks, but I would have a new car. That was what he felt was the ultimate success in life. And at the time, he was about 39. So if we start getting into the minds of where our kids are and finding out that they say some of the most ridiculous things or some of the most not so promising things, perhaps that's our time to go, whoa, well, what do you think a car will do? And then what happens after that? Then perhaps maybe we could channel our children's beliefs in themselves or their aspirations to be a little more broad than where they've stopped at.
Well, you know what, Katie? And Shannon, because I don't know how much longer I'm going to be on the line because my phone meter is going down. I've always had a question, and I've always wanted to know the answer to this. You know, and I saw it mostly when I was in college, where you have guys and they have reputations, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have reputations for being womanizers. And you know, you have sisters that come up. Now, the nice guys, they're nice, but they're too dull, they're too bored. Everybody wants a piece of the womanizer. Now, I've watched guys who would run through the whole campus. And then once they got with a girl, nobody wanted to deal with her. But my question was, what draws women to these brothers that they know are lying to them but are saying all the right things? For instance, if you have a brother that's coming up to you and saying, listen, I'm not interested in anything but maybe a physical relationship at this time. I'm too tied up. I can't do all these other things. And I don't want to be one of those guys you assume that's a player. So I'm just telling you straight up, I'm attracted to you, but it's strictly physical right now. I can't give you more than that. Most women will say, when that guy comes up to them with that statement, that they will say, thank you, but no thank you. I deserve to be treated with a little more respect than that. Fine. But then you'll have a guy who is saying, I'll give you the earth, the moon, stars, I'll take you all over the world, just, you know, come with me. But they mean what the first guy said.
Right.
But the woman will go to that guy. What the hell is the thinker behind that? Because,
you know what it is? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, because I get confused because, you know, I was somewhere between both worlds. Depending on who you were, I could have been that womanizer in college. Or I could have been the nice guy, depending on who you were to me at the time. But at that moment, you know, once you've been used by the womanizer, you become taboo to the rest of the campus because that womanizer, we all know that womanizer has been around the block. And why would you want to settle down with somebody that he wouldn't want to do, that he just tossed down to the garbage? Because that's how most men look at it after the fact. And that's why those women are out there saying, they can't find good men. It's not that they can't find good men, but they thought. But the perception from the men is they thought that they had one safely tucked away in that glass, do not break it unless emergency, and comes out. What she perceived to be an emergency was not an emergency to that guy behind the glass. So I just want to like to know if somebody could just tackle that issue while we're talking about this. I think I have like 6% left. Accurate. Okay, so I'll sit back and listen for a minute.
Okay, I can answer that perfectly for you. Because I told you women like fairy tales. They like to be lied to. Not all women, of course, but most women do. Because it sounds good. I met a guy that's I was in the Navy, and we're good friends, and we joke about it to this day. When I met him, he looked at me, and he was like, dang, you look good. He was like, you know what? I want to have sex with you. And I was 18, and I stood there, and I couldn't believe he had the nerve to say that to me. But to this day, I tell him, I respect the fact that you came at me and you told me all you ever wanted was sex. This guy right now has at least 5 or 6 girlfriends, and they all know about him. And they don't mind because he's honest with them at all times. They respect that honesty. But then there are some women that like to be told a lie. They like the fairy tale. They like that illusion. Because, again, everyone's looking for that Prince Charming. They're looking for Prince Eric and Aladdin and all those Happily Ever After movies we're fed when we're growing up. We're looking for the Richard Gere and the Pretty Woman. That's what we're looking for. But most people aren't in touch with reality, and they don't realize that all men want is sex. Not all men want sex, but for the most part, that's what they're looking for. So once you recognize guys and realize they're in danger, then you can determine exactly what they want. But that's what it is. Women like to be lied to. They can sit and say all day that they don't, but why did you say what you just said? Why do they fall for it? Because in the end, they want the lies. They don't want to hear the truth. They don't want to hear that all I'm worth is sex. It's a sad, harsh reality to some, but that's the case. They don't want the truth. So men, most men, have to tell those lies and sell those dreams because that's the only thing that's going to get them what they want in the end.
Well, let's go back a little further, Erica. How about the fact that everybody puts this mandatory culture about college? Not that we're spending this money or you've gone through all this financial aid, red tape crap to get a scholarship or whatever it is to get in there. Why is it that everybody makes a big mandatory badge of achievement that there has to be something called girls gone wild or guys gone wild in college? Why does everybody have to associate college days with their wild period? Why isn't there anybody who's not handing them off and saying, you know, focus on getting your education instead of men patting their boys in the back talking about, now I know when you go into college. That's not what's supposed to be associated with college, but that's what is, especially the spring break culture. Okay, how about that? How about we, what Professor just said, with a guy who meant what the player said but doesn't want to get the rejection of a woman saying, no, thank you, I choose not to. You know, they want to charm the choice out of a person. Why is that? Why is it that instead of you saying, this is what I want, and then taking your chances with somebody who probably will take it as it is, you have to alter what you really need, alter your character to come up with a good approach so that you could get your foot in the door, only to be exactly what you plan to do anyway. Why is it? Why do you need to come up with something you don't need, to you don't really mean, just to get your foot in the door? That means there's something about you you're insecure with.
Not necessarily, Katie. That's not necessarily the truth, and that's the point I'm getting at. There's the fact that, excuse me, I'm trying to talk and eat steak at the same time. That's not working out well. But the point I'm getting at is the same guy could tell the women two different things, okay? But the thing is, the first thing is what he meant, but when he told her exactly what he meant, you know, when you see on women on the television shows and talk shows, they say, all I want is a guy to be open and honest with me. But when a guy is open and honest about just one, I mean, you need somebody at the damn club. You need somebody at the bar. You're not looking for love there. You know,
no, you're looking for a hookup.
And the people that come into the club, both men and women, understand that. That's why on Friday nights and Saturday nights, the same people you've seen all week in work clothes are out with skirts 2 inches past their waist, and the same guys are out there flashing money that they know damn well belongs in an envelope to pay a bill. But everybody's fronting on Friday, so they can be sorry on Saturday. And what the, that's one of the biggest problems. You go over in England, right? You go over to in Britain. That is one of the most open cultures in the world in terms of what happens. You will hear a guy say to women, I think we have to get to bed and sleep tonight. What do you say? And I can't even do the accent. That's a bad attempt at the accent. But it's like, oh, okay, or vice versa. But the bottom line is, there's no playing games. There's no cat and mouse here and there. And then, you know,
you know, you have situations that end up in date rape and all that because things weren't actually ever set out in the open or nobody was open, honest enough with one another. And, you know, these things happen when you can't be open and honest and tell people what the real deal is, and they can't respond to you in the way that they're asking you to respond to them. So the lies are coming. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just wanted to answer that little portion. I think there's another little problem with that. You know, yes, we do want open and honest, but guess what? If you're open and honest, you also have to understand there's a 50-50 chance that somebody's going to reject what you're offering. And that's the problem that most men don't get. Most men don't understand that being open and honest doesn't guarantee you're going to get the target you're looking for. And that's where the games begin.
Well, that's what I mean, though.
That's what I'm saying. So why not teach these men to take the no and move on to somebody else?
Most will. Because you can't have it both ways, Katie. You can't have it both ways. You can't be out there living. Wait. I just want to say one thing. I got you. You can't be out there, okay, saying yes to a thing you know is a lie just because it's something you want to hear. Okay, now if it's the same guy telling you two different things, in the first way you just didn't think he showed you enough respect because he told you the truth, but he showed you the ultimate respect because he lied to you, that's sort of an oxymoron. That's a contradiction in terms. So which one is it? So I think the confusion leads to a lot of the issues that go because the situations start off confused, and that's the foundation. So once you start off with a confused foundation, everything else is shaky from there on out.
The thing you have to understand, I think both sex, men and women, are not being honest when it comes to this. If men or women were saying to men, we want you to be honest, and we will be honest to you if we're not interested of getting to know you, I think both sex would not play games. But I know men who approach women this way who say, I'm not going to approach a woman this way because I know she's going to play games. And I know some women who basically will say yes to the guy, but deep down they were interested. They're interested in the guy because of what he brings as a money. They're only interested in the guy saying, look at this guy. He has cars and this and that. Let me take out of his time. Let me do this. Let me get free drinks or free drink or whatever free, even though I'm not interested. And the woman knows she's not interested in that guy, but she'll still play a game. So both sex are playing games. Both sex don't believe in honesty. Both of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Stanley. And you know what? If a person is measuring what they're going to get involved with based on what they can get, then obviously they're not looking for relationships, period. So that already is a taboo to get started. My thing is, if first of all, players, if you got real game, then come forth for what you're offering and see how it works for you. Problem is, most guys want that target. Most girls want that target. And if they come up saying, yes, I understand where you're coming from, let's speak women. You know, it's a good guy. They're cute to the girls, whatever the hell it is. She's not really up to it. She wants to play the game, but she wants to get her fill of whatever it is she saw that's good in that person. She don't want the work that goes with it to make it work, or she doesn't really want to give him what's there. That's the problem. Why aren't we making sure we understand, we tell our children, listen, you can try, put your best foot forward, be honest. You may not always get what you want. That is the problem. If this wasn't an issue, there wouldn't be need for guys to sit there, play a game, put a slip of Mickey into some girl to get her to have sex when she doesn't know she's having sex.
Yeah, and some women, I'm sorry, especially clubs and other places, social places, women want to have full attention but are not even interested in meeting any men. Not at all interested at all meeting many men. And all week or 2 weeks, girl has been bad, girl has been down. Let me use my sexuality. Let me use that power and everything to have an arousal of men looking at me and feeling powerful. And in the end of the night, you come to that woman and you say, what was the point of you going out? What was your point of meeting people? Oh, it was my whole point was just to feel good for myself.
Okay, but that's not putting any hurt on anybody. That's a guy getting hard and can't take the fact that he's not going to get that direction down the way he wants. You know, it's a stupid thing to do. You want to get dressed up just to go sit and do nothing. okay? Or maybe people are just going out to have a good time. It's nobody's damn choice or nobody's damn right on the other side to try to get something more out of that. It's nobody's business why a person goes out and does something, but it becomes their business when that person has a game and that other person's involved. But if she wants to just go out, if she wants to go out there and she knows she looks good and she knows that whatever, whatever, okay, let me explain this to you. Guys are going to get hard. You know that's going to happen. If that's your game and you walk home, it is a 50-50 chance that somebody who don't have any respect is going to do what they're going to do. But it's not that person's right to do so. Doesn't excuse you for doing it.
I agree.
And it doesn't excuse you. It doesn't excuse anybody for saying, well, it looks like that's what she wanted to do. Why didn't she do it?
No, it doesn't excuse it and everything. I just say that it's a game that is a very dangerous game because it's a game that a lot of women play, and it's a game that we should be solid in the business. Do not play that game. If you are interested in meeting somebody, interested in meeting, but not play with somebody's heart, men or women, because you don't know the reaction of that person when you play with their heart and their emotions.
Okay, their heart and their emotion is way different from what you just mentioned. From a girl going to a club, she's sitting in the bar, she's wearing a hot outfit, and you got hard, and because you feel that her coming out there was for that. Now, I'm just clearing up what you said, family. You said a girl will go to a club, and she'll be dressed up.
She'll go to the club, and she'll provoke them. I'm not talking about girls going to the club, staying with a friend, and having a good time. I'm talking about the girl knows that she's doing the move, knows that she's dancing provocatively, being a tease in front of any guys, and making sure that all the guys are paying only attention to her, to validate her. That's what I'm talking. I'm not talking about the girls that are basically saying, girl, I'm with my friends, I'm drinking a little bit, and I'm having a good time.
And
I have no problem with those girls.
Okay. If a girl is walking up to some guy, she says, let's go. And at the last minute, she changes her mind. As hard as it's going to be, you guys know what comes after that, right?
Yeah, of course. She has the right to say no. If she says no is no. She has the right.
Okay, and guess what? Then that would be the thing where you guys say, wait a minute, that's a poison pill. Gotta go. Gotta go.
Yeah.
And that's what we're speaking about today. When those people see this type of stuff coming and continue forward anyway, and then have complaints later, and then all this other stuff happen now. I do want to ask the panel a question, all right? Wait, before I do that, let me bring this panelist in. Hang on a minute. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
How you doing, Cody? This is, hold on, let me turn you down on my computer. This is Patrick.
Hi, Patrick. Okay, let's hear what you have to say.
I just wanted to, not to go back and rehash, you guys have been having a great discussion, but I wanted to add in one element that's often overlooked in these discussions, and that's the biological component that can't be changed, if you will. You know, and when I speak on that, I'm talking about the fact that the more sex you have, the more pheromones you release to attract more people to you. And there's also, in that sense, the confidence aspect of everybody likes confident people. And it's a fine line between arrogance and confidence. When you first meet arrogance, it looks confident and it looks attractive. It's not until it slights you that you see that it's arrogant. So there's that aspect. And then there's the aspect that we have to look at when we're talking about men and women stand in these toxic relationships, and in that aspect, we have to look at the components that comes with sex that deals with the attraction and people being addicted to one another on a biological level, in the same manner that they would be addicted to heroin or crack cocaine or anything else of that nature. Those types of biological components are also things that kind of drive this behavior, especially in young, immature people who haven't been taught these things. They don't honestly know why they're attracted to these people, and they don't know why the sex is the only thing keeping them there, because when they think about it rationally, they should be able to just leave. But then when you try to do that, you start going through withdrawal, and there's a biological reason for that. So I just wanted to add in the biological component to the conversation you guys were already having.
Awesome input as usual. Patrick. So now let me ask you a couple of questions. First one off, these attractions to these bad boys, bad girls, how do you guys feel it directly relates to the violent aspect in our community? And I'll start with you, Patrick, coming in as the last person in.
I think they have they definitely have a relationship. The obvious one being if the bad boy gets the girl, then it's in my best interest to be badder than you. So, you know, that's obvious point number one, and the same can be applied for females. If the bad girl gets the hot guy, then it's in my best interest to be loose so that I can, or bad, or whatever, however we stereotype that, so that I can get the guy that I want. Because, I mean, to be honest, everybody is going after things that they want. Even if you want somebody to treat you nice and respectable, that's still a want. So I think that's the first immediate response, or the first immediate correlation to the negative impact of our community. As Erica mentioned, the bad guy, the popular guy on the block is normally the guy that's up to no good. He's normally the well-known guy on the block, and he's not really of any benefit to his community. But he is the guy that is the representation of man on that block. And the same with the bad girl. She might not be the girl that guys want to marry, but she is the girl that's easy to get to, something we spoke to on the last couple of nights. So I think both of those things come into play when you start talking about the impact. I think the desirability of the bad boy and the bad girl causes young people that don't have much guidance to seek to become badder than the other guy for the props, the respect that they get, not just from opposite sexes, but from members of the same sex.
Oh, wow, absolutely awesome. Stanley, you. Stanley?
Yes, sorry. Of course, I think it has an influence. It has something to do with it, but I agree with the other caller and everything. Does it bring the violence? Like, just repeat the question. I just want to make sure I answer it properly.
I said there's attraction to these bad boys and bad girls. What do you think? Do you think there's a direct relationship to community violence?
Yes, of course. I think that the problem with the bad boys and the bad girls is it goes to the point that if the bad boys and everything, the problem with all of that is, once the guy has that girl and everything, and let's say the girl decides to basically wake up and decide, you know what, I don't want to be with him, this man and everything, a lot of bad boys won't take it anymore and basically will bring up the violence. You're not going anywhere. You're with me. It's too thick and thin, and a lot of them just go berserk. A lot of them will kill you if you leave them.
Right. That's
so so it is something that a lot of people have to say. That guy basically said, you're with me. You do not, your life belongs to me. You do not make a choice anymore in life. And some women will stay with that and everything because they felt very attracted to a man who was strong and this and that. But if it goes overboard, that guy becomes possessive.
Right. Or pretty much don't want their reputation to be broken by being left behind. So, yeah, that's a good point. Erica, Professor, are you still with us? Okay.
Yeah, I'm still here because I had, 2%?
All right, well, throw it in real quick. Direct relationship to violence, do you think there is one from attraction to bad boys, bad girls?
Yeah, I mean, look at the element into which you become attracted to a bad boy or bad girl. You know, you're attracted to the wildness, the wild side, but until it's directed at you. You know, it's cool to be with a bully until the bully turns on you. So,
right. You
know, when you're dealing with a wild guy or a wild woman and all their wild antics is cute and it's attractive, it's not attracted to the people that it's happening to. And then you finally realize, well, damn, it can happen to me too. I'm getting out. And that's when you have that conflict because those people are used to using power and force to get what they want. And if they aren't ready for you to leave, they're going to exert their power or what they perceive as power. They're going to exert their force, and they're going to do whatever they have to do because, first of all, You leaving them, oh, now you're being disrespectful. So, you know, you know how we deal with disrespect on the street. So it, we become real violent. Unfortunately, our coping mechanisms in terms of handling those situations are not where they need to be. So, yeah, I see that happening, and I definitely see it leading to violence, and that's why people who get in those toxic situations and you're dealing with people like that, you really need to be careful in terms of and walk on eggshells the entire time, because at any given moment, as soon as that person feels comfortable enough, like, all right, I got her, or I got them, at that moment, that's when that switch flips, and that's when you try, and when you try to break out, it's like, nah, it's too late. So now we have to go through some type of conflict, and it often results in violence. And sometimes, you know, like Stanley said, sometimes it ends up in death.
Right. Okay, Erica.
Okay, Katie, I'm sorry. Repeat the question again.
Do you think the attraction to rude love, as I'll call it, because I don't want to keep saying bad boys, bad girls, the attraction to rude love, do you believe that there's a direct relationship to community violence?
Yes, it is, and my take on it is a lot of the times when people have a certain type of demeanor that's redeemed to be bad, they have a negative attitude about life. They've been through a lot. So a lot of the times they have, like if you're a drug dealer and that's what you want to do, what comes along with that territory is stressful, and sometimes it does allow you to be physically abusive towards your significant other. Positive people normally do positive things. Positive people normally don't let certain things bother them to allow them to have a bad day or a bad attitude. They know how to revert that energy, that stressful energy, into something positive.
Okay, that's absolutely awesome. There is another caller coming in. Before I go in, I wanted to touch on something that you actually mentioned in the previous two segments, Erica, which I think also is one of the direct relationships to violence. I think that a bad girl or a bad boy in the first place has a problem with communicating what's wrong with them or what's going on with them. So with that being said, that already will, you know, guide whatever behavior that they're doing. And then once they've established whatever, you know, quote-unquote respect or popularity or power that they get from now being a reputed bad person, okay, breaking out is going to be definitely something that interferes with their street credit, with their street image, with, you know, looking like they're the ones that's on the other end of what they normally do. So absolutely. Now, I brought up those four girls, and I thank you, Erica, because you shared the story with me. You know, these girls had everything going for them. They actually did 4 years of an advanced college. How on earth do you throw all that away by helping these guys harbor their guns, their drugs, by going out there and setting up robberies, believing that you have loyalty in a group that's already made up on a lie? Then you know what? I sort of interpreted the girl that got shot, the one of the four that got shot to death, after they took everything that there was and tied these guys up, to be in anger of, you know, the person that shot her being angry about the fact that, who do you think you are, you know, being somebody who succeeds? You think you're better than us? So we're back to all of this stuff that we should be definitely pouring down into our kids' head as the poisonous pill that it is to prevent the problem. Not saying we're going to save everybody, but if this person has already allowed themselves to be reputed a bad girl or a bad boy, what's the reason behind it, and why can't they communicate in a more progressive and self-productive manner? That's the situation. That's what I believe it comes in. Let's bring in our other panelists and allow them time before we run out. Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Good evening, Katie. This is Al Tariq calling from Dothan, Alabama. Good evening.
Hey, how are you doing, Al Tariq?
I'm okay.
All right, well, what's your take? You know, you're coming in on the other half, but what's your take on, you know, the rude love situation? What do you feel that both sides contribute to the poison of it, and what are some solutions? And then you can answer the question that we were just speaking to as to whether or not you believe that this rude love attraction has a direct relationship to community violence.
Yes, I do. Because as far as it having something to do with community violence, I definitely believe that because of the fact that that you have so many years of built up things that have been wrong, you know, as a direct of going back to, you know, a lot of our roots as far as our history and stuff. You know, so it's a lot of anger there, a lot of suppressed anger and stuff that's there. You know, it's hard for a lot of people to understand how to deal with it, you know, especially if you're the type and you're coming from these communities where it's in the streets. You see how the kids are they're going all out with the violence itself. So, you know, it can be easy to be violent towards, you know, towards the female gender, you know, and the opposite, because there's so many things you see nowadays where these younger kids and a lot of people are posting where they're just doing all this fighting all the time. You know, if it's not a fight, it's somebody getting shot or something. So, you know, it's like that violent disposition that's out there. A lot of younger kids are gravitating towards that. You know, so yes, I feel that can be, you know, a part of what's making, you know, everything, you know, hard, even harder on us as a people, because a lot of our people are either scared to deal with it as far as the grown-ups. You know, so if that makes it that much harder because you're leaving the kids on their own, so they feel that they have to fend for themselves, and whatever way they gravitate towards each other with them, is that saying that you don't like saying KD, but to a lot of them, they're going to say it is what it is and deal with it the best way they can.
Awesome. And what do you feel are both genders' contributions to this? I hate to say the word, but this rude love culture.
Mm-hmm. Okay, like, you'll see, like, it's a part of the independence thing is in there, you know, as far as the women and stuff like that, you know, and that's a big part of, I think, a lot of stuff today, because even in certain songs, you have it where, you know, you have it on both sides, you know, but we don't love those hoes. And then, like, the last so many years has been women who say don't trust, you know, no N-word. You know, so it's a thing of mistrust there, you know, and not to trust, you know, each other. And when you don't trust the people and stuff like that, that leaves more room for not just physical violence, but violence in different areas of our lives. You know, rather if it's violence through the abuse of words or have, you know, to the highest level, which would be the physical manifestation. So it's just real, just goes that deep with us because, you know, we've been a very hurt people over the years and we're still hurting. And, you know, if you feel that the only way for you to be healed after a while from not getting help, you know, you start adopting that bad side into where, well, I just hurt somebody else, and, you know, misery love company, that'll make me feel better just because I was able to do something to them, and you know, they're going to do something to me. So it's kind of like, you know, you're in it for survival. You're in survival mode. And a lot of our people today, young and old, we feel as though we're in survival mode. So when you're just trying to survive, you're trying to win. Survival of the fittest. The strong survive.
Interesting point, and there's actually, after I'm going to address that for a minute, and then actually there's going to be two questions I ask, or I should say a two-part question, and Patrick, you're going to be the person I pose it to in a minute, okay? Interesting that you said that with, you know, the I guess the bravery or whatever it is about, you know, joining the bad side of things, or it is what it is and deal with it the best way you can. You guys ever find yourself that, it, you know, if you do say curse words, like
you're yelling about something, but it doesn't seem like you have that real impact until you add, like, that bad word in there, and suddenly you feel, like, this false sense of being empowered with what you're saying. Has that ever happened to anybody? Hmm. Wow, I got crickets.
You said from being empowered by saying, like...
Like, have you ever felt like, you know, like when you said that curse word or you put some big old, you know, like physical gesture into it that, like, you know, you're really getting an impact across, even though you yelling should be enough or what you're saying should be enough? Like, we have this false bravery, even just being angry about something. Like, you normally, let's say you're a shy person, but... got angry one day, and then suddenly you can say things you would never say on a normal day because now you're angry and now you feel like, you know, the anger gives you that rush of power. Okay? A lot of times I think that's where this bad boy, bad girl thing comes from. You know, we spoke about the recreational aspect of becoming a bad boy, bad girl, the rebellious aspect, you know, and then suddenly you get this rush from it. It's not really you, but it's what you do and what you got from trying it out once. Now you're going to step back in and do it again. And I think that's what happens with that. And then it turns into this whole other vicious thing. And I think that I want to ask you, Patrick, hey, do you think that where, Patrick, you with me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure because I'll be asking you questions. You're not there. Do you feel that the lack of the passing the torch of the community, the village that we had, is one thing that makes this rude thing, this rude love culture attraction so much more powerful? That's the first part of it.
So, I'm sorry, you were going in and out on my phone. You said I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
The lack of the village makes the rude culture now, you know, much more intense and much more dangerous, I should say. Because you remember back in the day, you being attracted to bad boy, it wasn't as bad as all the results you're getting now.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel that the lack of the village involvement, you know, we speak about how often now, I think the 50 is the new 20 type thing. So do you feel that us losing our place in our rightful passing the torch ritual is a reason why things are so bad with the attraction to bad boys and bad girls?
Oh, most definitely. I think not having the village aspect is a big portion of the problems we're having with what you so elegantly termed as rude love. I think that has a tremendous impact because when we had the village mentality and when we had the village parental and communal culture, the bad boy, bad girl wasn't as prevalent. They weren't allowed to thrive because they weren't beneficial to the community. You know, back to when we had those times, if it wasn't beneficial for the community, it didn't exist inside of the community. So, you know, the whole premise of bad boys and bad girls being allowed to grow and thrive is only allowed to exist because we don't have the community to cut that bacteria or to cut those weeds off at the head or to cure those cancers before they even get a chance to form. Because the village would say, no, that's not, look, you take that bad boy, whatever, come here. We're going to get that out of your system right now before you do anything destructive to anybody other than yourself. And we're not even going to let you abuse yourself because you're a part of our community. Your success is our success. Our success is your success. Your cancer affects all of us. So we need to get that straightened out right now.
Wow. Okay. Part two of this question is, nowadays, do you think that the more blatant and I don't know how to put this. Like, I guess the outburst of women doing this, and I'm going to really go to the women media because Rihanna, Come Here Rude Boy, you know, MC Light, Anita Roughneck, you have all these other girls talking about Give It To Me Hard, Daddy, and all this other stuff. Do you think that also is a big contribution to, you know, the
sensationalized image of rude boys or rude girls, for that matter.
Was that to me, or did you say Al Tariq?
No, you, part B.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay. I agree with that as well. I think music plays an integral part in the development of culture. Music, in a lot of senses, is the voice of a culture of people.
Mm-hmm.
And when that voice is continuously saying, treat me this way, I like it, do this to me and I'll do this to you and you'll like it, you know, act like a butt and, you know, I'll kiss it, and all these other things. When you're
right.
constantly being bombarded with those messages and you're constantly being told, because you have to remember, a lot of people in the black community get their image of how to treat people from their music, from the movies. That's why we speak of the fairy tales with girls so often, because they're getting their what's going to happen when I grow up and get married from Disney movies, from TV shows. That's where we speak on the boys walking around with their pants down selling drugs thinking that that's the life, because they're getting their image of what it means to be a man from the artists, from the TVs, from the people they see that look like them, that have what they think have money because they're on the TV. So that definitely plays a role. Like the role of music on the development of culture and the development of a group of people can't be understated. So most definitely that has tremendous implications. And even to go back to the first question, if we had a community, the music wouldn't be the way it is. Because
absolutely.
You got to think, when we had a community of, when we had a communal society where everything was for the community and the community was for the people, most of the music coming out then was positive, uplifting, church music. Even if it was secular music, there was still enough love. It was balanced. Nowadays, there is no balance. Everybody's talking about doing for self. What can you do for me? I ain't worried about that girl. It ain't enough for me to delete her number and move on. All these other things you got going on. And all of that is because the community has been destroyed. So without getting too deep and without talking too long, yes, I agree with both of those statements.
In particular, women artists sending that message is what I was really trying to get at. And I'm asking because, as I spoke about so often, Patrick, women are under this blanket, you know, age-old belief that, you know, we want more, we expect higher, we are, you know, flowers to be protected. We wouldn't do the things that rough, hard men would do. So I'm asking in particular, being that music is already, we already know, we speak often about how the rap artists and the athletes are, like, you know, considered the only black success that people are putting forward. And I'm asking if, being that these women who are supposed to be the people that, you know, would fight down the over-sexualization and all these other things, with women artists conveying that message or sensationalizing it, does that make this rude love thing even more intense? So I got the music part, absolutely. So
yeah.
In addition to that, is music from women putting that message out also fueling the fire?
Of course, because... And even with that, I think what's going on with a lot of women is with the and I'm not fixing to get on my the anti-feminist soapbox, but I do think a portion of that has become anything men can do, I can do, and I can do it better than men, so I'm going to compete with men. And in a lot of cases, I think that's what we're looking at when you look at a lot of the messages that women are sending out. If men can be a dog, I can be a bigger dog. If men can do, but I think even still, to go back to your question, I think things like that affirm the way men are naturally taught, or not naturally, the way men are being taught to treat women. It's one thing when it comes from a man. It's another thing when it comes from a woman telling you that it's okay, that's how I want to be treated, I'm going to do that to you anyway, or whatever the message might be. It's one thing, because that completely destroys the concept of balance. And so I definitely think it's definitely intensified when it comes from women. And also, too, you have to look at, I don't care how misogynistic a man might be, a woman's voice is always going to have a certain amount of power in a man's life for the simple fact that he doesn't respect anybody quite as much as he respects his mother.
Right.
So when you have a woman saying these things to men and telling these men that it's okay to do this and it's okay to be this way, it most definitely, without a shadow of a doubt, intensifies the message and it affirms the message and it makes the man feel like it's okay to be that way.
Thank you very much. Erica, are you with me, honey?
Sorry, I'm eating. Yes, I am.
Did you hear the questions or do you need me to repeat them?
I've heard them, but I need you to repeat them. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm with you. All right. So the first part of it is, do you feel that the lack of the village nowadays causes this rude love culture to be so intense and so dangerous as it is? That's part A.
Okay, I'm going to answer that first. Yes, I do, for the reasons Patrick gave as far as there's no one teaching these men how to treat a woman, and there's no one teaching a woman how to be treated or how to treat a man. My sister likes bad boys, and her daughter's father is what you would call your typical bad boy, I guess, and my auntie can't stand him, and she will call him a deadbeat dad to his face. And she treats him like he's the scum of the earth. And when I first met him, he was kind of reluctant to meet me because I guess he was thinking I was going to feel the same way the bulk of my family does about him. But what I tell my family is, instead of getting on him because he's a product of his environment and what he was brought up in, why don't you tell her to make better choices in her life? Why don't
Wow.
you show her an experience and set better examples as to what kind of man she should be choosing instead of dogging his man out for being who he is. I'm quite sure, especially after I met him, he couldn't pretend to be anything other than himself. There's no way he could have. So at the end of the day, I fault her more for choosing that man and making that choice than for him being a product of his environment because he didn't have anyone to teach him any better and to show him any better. I don't know the relationship with his father, but I do know I've seen enough of his mother to know what kind of woman he probably would go after.
Awesome.
So in part two,
do you think that the outburst, or I should say I don't know the word that I'm looking for, but like the bold youth, I guess, of female rappers giving this message. Like, I brought up the examples of, you know, Rihanna, come here, rude boy, boy. And then you got MC Light back in our day talking about, I need a rough neck. Then every female artist that's coming out is talking like, I'm a ride or die chick or whatever you can do, my fuck daddy type thing. So do you think that the use of women sending this message out also contributes to, you know, the rude love intensity?
Yes, and vice versa. I had a conversation with my son today because I explained to him, because he's not into sports at all, but I explained to him what was going on with LeBron so that I could teach him about a black man and his character and his integrity. And so I often write about music and how music hypnotizes us into believing what they want us to believe. And I had to tell him about, you know, the song Chris Brown had, These Women Aren't Loyal. And when I sat down and I talked to him about this song, I said, that song is telling you that women aren't loyal. Off the bat, it's telling you to mistrust a woman. Why is that? And I asked, in return, I said, would you ever hear Justin Timberlake saying that about a woman? When you listen to Maroon 5, they don't sing about women not being loyal. I said, why is it in our music? We talk about sex all the time and the mistrust in between the relationship between a man and a woman. So definitely listening to a song, art imitates life and vice versa.
And you know something, that song you mentioned from Chris Brown, it goes a little further. And not only is it talking about that women are
you know, Miss Loyal, but they're saying these hoes ain't loyal.
Just that but I didn't want to curse, so, yeah.
These hoes ain't loyal, so they're pretty much even putting women out without, you know, calling them their proper name and everything. So, Al Tariq, I'm going to pose those two questions to you. Do you think the lack of the village intensifies the rude love culture? That's the first part. Tariq, you there? I think we lost him. Now, Patrick and Eric, I'm going to ask you a third part to this. Do you think that the rude love culture is such a big fatal poison pill as it is because there are a lot of younger kids getting involved in relationships like this? Patrick.
Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
No, Patrick, you first.
Oh. Is that Al-Tariq?
Al-Tariq, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
All right, dude, we lost you for a minute. So I gotta pose the first question to him. Let me ask you, Al Tariq, the two-part question. Do you believe that the lack of the village nowadays intensifies the poisonous fruit, I guess, of rude love?
Of course. Yep. It couldn't be any other way, because if it wasn't poisoned, then it would be either normal or more of a pure sense of what it should be. So, and when things aren't right, you know, then things won't be ran right and the people won't act right, you know. So it definitely contributes to the poison of it, because when you don't have a man and woman able to be together, then that destroys the foundation of the family. So it really couldn't be any other way for the most part. You know, you may have certain children who may be blessed to come out and be good kids despite, you know, the poison that may be between or because of their parents. But then for the most part, you're going to see as how we see, you know, today in a lot of black communities. You know, we'll see where the kids are going astray, they're getting in a lot of trouble, they're having trouble at schools and stuff like that, you know, they're hard to really, you know, manage or the parents, you know, because they weren't manageable or because they can't manage themselves and they let their kids do whatever, you know, and that can spoil generations. So we must get up on that, because if we don't, then the kids will just keep going the way that they're going, and they will just find a way themselves. The one thing that we have some sort of is power, and everybody, you know, has a little power of their own, and everybody would like to be able to assert that power. Nobody likes to feel weak, but when you feel that you're in a weak position and no one can help you, then you have to fend for yourself. And I believe that this is the dilemma that we basically faced with our children, because they're like, well, you know, you see that a lot of the parents are scared to even approach them. So what are you going to do? You're going to have to, they're going to, like I said earlier, they're going to grow up on their own. You know, whether it's right or wrong, they're going to do what they feel and what they say, and what I've heard when I was coming up as a teenager and being out there in the streets and being in the hustle and all that type of stuff. You know, you wind up taking on your own, you know, your own version of maturity, you know, and you grow up quick, and it's not much that you're going to allow anybody to tell you, because you're like, well, I'm doing this, and I'm going to accept the consequences, and it is what it is. And if nobody can penetrate your feelings or your conscience, then you stay out there like that. And there's many people who I know until this very day and are grown and may have some kids, may have some grandkids, and they're still poisoned because they're still going to jail, and they're like 50 years old, and I know some people that are 60, and they continually go through that vicious cycle. So, yes, if you're poisoned that way, the poison can even remain. You know, but certain ones of us are blessed to turn it around, and I've also seen that as well with enough of us, but, you know, with some of us, really. Well, a lot of us stay damaged by that rude, what you say, the rude boy and rude girl dilemma that we're going through.
And the second part of that question was going to be, do you think the use of women in music coming out with this, you know, like I spoke a little earlier, Rihanna with the Come Here Rude Boy and MC Light in Our Day with I Need a Roughneck, and now all of these women artists that are coming out with lyrics that suggest that they're ride or die chicks to these thugs, bring it to me and I'm with you and to the end, and, you know, give it to me harder, do it to me bad, baby, and all this other stuff. Do you feel the use of women in this musical message is also contributing to the poison pill?
Of course. If you watched anything of the BET Awards, you look who's won it the last so many years. It's been Nicki Minaj. And you know what type of thing she talks about. And I mean, that the frequency of music, it can change a lot of things, you know. And you know, we could be singing a song that we don't really like, if we hear so many times, we may not really be into it, but after a while, it grows on you where you even start knowing the words, and it's not a song that you're particularly into. That's how powerful the frequency and the spirit of music is, because it's words, and then those instrumentals and everything, they sound good, and what do they are? What's the saying, that old saying? You know, music calms the savage beast. So I believe just as much as it calms the savage beast, it can provoke the savage beast too, or the beast within. You know, it don't have to be necessarily a savage, but it can provoke a savage beast to come out of you as well. And you see how the music is nowadays, so I believe that that's a part of, I like what the professor says, and other people say it as well, you know, as far as programming, that music programs you. So yes, you know, with the women doing that as well as the men, it's a lot of violence inside of music as far as, you know, like rap culture especially. But then you even have music that I've heard with the blues that, you know, you have women saying certain things, you know, because I listen to different forms of music, and it's not just rap. You know, it's certain things, anything goes, and a woman can say this, and let's go to bed, and, you know, and like Nicki Minaj, I was rubbing on this man's thing in the car and all this type of crazy stuff, you know, And yes, music can definitely influence. It's a very powerful tool, and that's why today the youth are directed, the industry as far as our people are directed, really. It's not that our people are just doing it just because that's what's in their heart. It's a programming that's going on, and the puppeteers are pulling the strings of our people because they know the power and the influence that we've always had as far as music, you know. And it's a form of entertainment. It takes you away from things. It actually takes you away from a lot of reality if you're not singing about positive reality. So, yes, definitely it can have an effect on men and women alike.
Thank you very much. There's another panelist coming in, and we have like 11 minutes left, so let me bring them in. Welcome to the show, Corey. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Kim in Chicago. How y'all doing?
Hey, Kim. Hi. Thank you for waiting.
Hi. Oh, that's okay. I've been listening the whole time, but I had to wait till my household gets quiet. But I just wanted to add a little, you know, you were asking if our culture is influencing its rude relationships. And I say, yeah, because back when we did have a village and you had, when you brought your boyfriend or your girlfriend home, everybody scrutinized them, like, okay, who are his people and where's she from? But now that we don't have the village, we don't have a communal sense of everybody looking out for you to make sure you get with the right people. And if you don't, it's like, oh, no, you can't get with him because we know his people. You know, that's the way we used to do it. We don't have that anymore. So with the village leaving, it kept a lot of we lost a lot of our families being responsible for who we get with, as opposed to us just out there by ourselves just winging it. So that's the only thing I want to add.
Oh, that was absolutely awesome, Kim. And I remember you from Professor's show, and you were on fire there, too. Second part of that question, do you believe that the outburst now of female rappers and singers is sending out this message in their lyrics and in their personas on stage, do you think that that, in addition, helps to fuel the fire to this rude love culture?
Yeah, I think so. I don't listen to the rap, and I only know, like, I watched the BET Awards this time, so I knew what the gentleman was talking about when he said Nicki Minaj, she's won a few times. But music is very important to us as a community, as he said, because we're a musical people. We have, like, the beat and soul, and like you said, we're being manipulated with our music. And I don't think our children understand that that's just a song somebody wrote. And although Nicki Minaj says she writes her own stuff, a lot of times somebody abstract is writing this music. So it's not, they may be singing it, but it's not anything that's coming from them. It's manufactured. And then it's all fiction, you know, because we know from the rap boys, a lot of the stuff they rap about, they have no idea because they grew up in the suburbs. So I think we have not taught our children the fiction of the music. Now, the music wasn't fiction back in the day because people were singing from their souls and their experience, but now that it's so commercial, it's just fiction and they're just telling a story, and they don't even live that story, but we're living the story because, you know, our children are thinking it's real.
Oh, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, Eminem wrote a song just about that, which was called Fan, and I brought it up in a previous segment, where a fan actually bought into his stage persona and, you know, took offense and took personal guidance into his own life and wind up killing his pregnant wife, sticking her in the trunk and, you know, driving into the river. So, you know, as much as that may or may not be a true story, in the lyrics he was bringing up how it was from the fans' point of view, and then he wrote back finally after a tour and said, come on, I was only clowning, dog. How screwed up are you? You know, but you're right. That's something I really haven't heard before. But we don't teach our children how to separate the fiction of modern-day music from what is and what is real. So now here's the final part of this question to the group, and Tim, I'm going to pose it to you first, coming in last. Do you believe that also another part of fueling this rude love culture is because a lot of the modern-day couples are a lot younger and without the village?
Well, I wouldn't say younger because, you know, before we were younger, getting married, because I had dysfunction in my family, and, you know, when I talk about it with our sisters, we feel that our parents got married too young, where, you know, so back in the day people got married young, but now people are, I guess the relationships are starting off early, where we used to have relationships when we were in our teens, but now, you know, with teens, they're with people, they're getting in relationships in elementary school. So I think the and I hope I'm not getting off topic, but the youngness of the youth, like you said, yeah, I think that's a part of it. It's people are getting into relationships too young, and I think maybe this is what y'all talked about earlier today, but you're not even a whole person, and you're trying to get with somebody else, and you can't do that. That causes dysfunction too. You have to be mature and grow up and have your own experiences and then bring that with to somebody else. You can't just go to the person and think that they're going to give you everything that you need.
Well, you know what, Tim, to add to that, back in the day, women were groomed to be wives. That was their duty. That was their only job. A lot of women didn't grow up to be independent, to have their own job, to come with anything other than her. That man had to court her in front of her family. He had to offer himself. So with that being said, women were taught to cook, they were taught to clean, and they were taught those things as an early age. Nowadays, women aren't taught those things. Women could get married in the 1800s at the age of 13. But at the age of 13, that woman or that little girl could get in the kitchen, she could cook, she could fix everything from scratch. The training has gone away from that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Patrick, I'm going to pose that part of the question to you. Do you believe that, you know, that now the couples are more youthful? And, of course, we spoke about the lack of a village now. Do you think that that's also a big gasoline tank to the fire of this rude love culture?
I think the lack of a village is huge. And I go so far as to say I think that's the bulk of it. I don't necessarily think age-wise the youth is a problem. I think maturity-wise the youth is a problem, and that's because of what Erica pointed out, the grooming back then, and we have to be honest with ourselves. The reason they keep having to raise the age limit on when you're legally an adult is because parents are preparing their children to be adults later and later. Like, we would embrace this culture of you're going to jack your life up until you're 30 and then you better fix it. Whereas right. back in the day, you know, look, you're a man at 13. You're a woman at, you know, 14, 15. There is no time for childhood. We don't have time for that. You have to get ready to be an adult. And, you know, obviously with the advancement of technology and society, nowadays, young people are afforded a childhood that they weren't necessarily afforded back then. But I think the maturity issue is a big issue. As Kim pointed out, we are getting married older and older. But maturity-wise, it seems like we're not maturing at the same rate that we were. And I think, as Erica put it, that has a lot to do with the fact that we aren't being groomed to be adults.
Absolutely. And if we got like 3.5 minutes left, so Al-Tariq, that last part of the question goes to you. Do you believe that the usefulness now of couples in this day and age is also a reason why the rude love culture is so intensified?
I basically believe what everybody said before me, and it's about the values that's instilled in the youth. So when the right values are instilled in them, then they have the right type of foundation to be able to, guide the ones that's coming up with them and the ones that will be coming behind them in the future. So without the proper guidance, then, of course, the youth is going to be astray. So long as the right values is placed in there and the right family values are there and the right guidance is there for them, you know, as a measuring stick, then eventually they'll be fine. But as far as how a lot of things are going today, a lot of our kids are raised up in single parents' homes, and they aren't able to see how man and woman is supposed to work as one unit, you know, supporting the whole and embracing the whole family unit. So, yes, that's a big part of it, you know, and support is the biggest part as well. You know, we have to be able to support them because enough support is not there. Where there's no love, then a lot of time hatred takes the place of it. So that's why I believe where the bad is, the bad girl and the bad boy will play the role in.
Well, thank you very much, Kim. Welcome to my panel. I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind, send me a Facebook friend request if you have an account so that I can add you into my thank yous at the end of the day. And to the rest of the listeners, you heard the common ground. The village is the problem, the lack of it. All of these things are coming out, these seeds being misdirected and pointed, and everything is just being shot out there. There's no guidance, there's no grounding, there's no grooming, and we're leaving these young people who's already in a state of confusion on top of what naturally happens in the teenage years, and we're leaving them there to go out there and try to fend for themselves. This is a problem. We have to start teaching our children how to love themselves and to want better for themselves so we can prevent the rude love culture and save our future. So until Sunday night on our special broadcast, everybody, at 8 p.m. Be blessed. Be a blessing. Make a difference. Again, Kim, welcome again to all of you. Thank you, and God bless you. Good night.
God bless. Good night.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.